Hey, folks, it's Brock with the Sprocket Podcast. Of course, you might be wondering, what's up with this episode? It's not quite about bikes. If you tune in all the way to the end, it is kind of about bikes. Also, this is about being drunk in public and an interesting service that someone that we know is involved with. And so we've mentioned it on the show. And we thought, hey, why don't we throw this up here? So without further ado, please enjoy this episode of the Sprocket Podcast about Portland's own Cheers.
Hello, it is the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus, and I am here without Aaron Flores today because Aaron Flores has to work. So, Aaron, we love you. We wish you well. We wish you were here. We'll send you a postcard. I am here with Brent. Is it Kepfer?
Kepfer, yes.
All right. I should have asked you that beforehand. But yes, Brent Kepfer is a friend of Eric, who is a friend of the show. And we are here. We're going to ask you a couple of questions about something that you do for your job,
okay?
Which is fascinating. So we're looking forward to that. Also, you like bicycling and whatnot.
Do.
So, thank you for coming in.
Of course, thank you for having me.
First of all, first things first. Let's announce what we are drinking, courtesy of our beverage sponsor, the Beer Mongers. You have one of my personal favorites right there.
It looks like I've got the Narwhal Imperial Stout by Sierra Nevada.
Sierra Nevada. So yeah. I was trying to remember if it was Sierra or not. They made the Narwhal, and I had that, unlikely enough, on the East Coast last year. And I guess maybe the Narwhal strikes me as an East Coast kind of whale, but I'm not sure where you would actually find it. I think it's Arctic. Anyways, the Narwhal is a fantastic Imperial Stout. So,
you know, I'm not much of a beer fan myself,
but, okay.
But this is some damn good beer.
Right, yeah. Right. Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. And did you have an opener over there?
I do, yeah.
Oh, nice,
yeah.
Nice. That's great, because I didn't offer you one. I just realized you might need one, but you've already got it open, so I'm impressed. Thank you. And does it have the year on it? It does. It's the 2015 Narwhal.
2015, yes.
I had the 2014 Narwhal. It may or may not be good. I don't know. I'm drinking the Woodland Empire from Old Boise. Or no, sorry. Woodland Empire is the brewer. Old Boise Lager is the beer. So, I was just over at the Beer Mongers. I met my wife. I invited her to be the co-host tonight, but she has to prepare for parent-teacher conferences at work all day tomorrow. So she didn't want to talk any more than she had to tonight. Just saving her voice for that. The Old Boise Lager has special meaning to me because some of my ancestors are buried just outside of Boise, Idaho.
Wow.
So I don't know if this, I really don't know if that has any connection other than this beer also came from Boise. But after coming from Boise, it came through the Beer Mongers. Have you been over there?
No, I haven't.
It's all good. It's over on 12th and Division, just
okay.
A couple blocks from here. And they are Portland's premier beer destination. They have the best atmosphere. As Adele and I were commenting, they have an enormous wooden stick that one of their patrons donated to be hung inside of the... It's in the shape of a snake, and it's all carved out of one enormous piece of wood.
Wow.
So, yes, the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division and 12th Avenue. So, yeah. And I don't know. This is probably going to come out tomorrow, something like that. If you hear this before Halloween, on the 31st of October, they are, in fact, having a costume party and a band. And, you know, even if you're on your way to another party, you always need beer at a party. So the Beer Mongers, there for you. So, Brent, what did you do before you got here today?
I had the day off.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I forget. Am I allowed to swear on here?
If you want to.
Okay.
It's totally up to you.
Okay. Usually what I call my adult shit.
Oh, nice.
Adulting today.
Grown-up stuff, yeah.
Yeah, grown-up stuff. And then got a workout in and then met with a personal trainer to talk about moving into the coaching and training realm.
Oh, there we go. Nice. Yeah. Have you coached before?
I have not.
Oh, nice.
I've wanted to.
Nice.
So.
What appeals to you about coaching?
I could kind of tie it in with what I do now.
Oh, sure.
For work.
Yeah.
Working with people that that want to be helped,
nice.
That want to make that change,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
is what draws me to that environment.
Nice.
So
yeah. You see, like somebody says, "I want to do this. I don't know how." You say, "I know how. Let me show you."
Yes, exactly.
Nice. That's exactly what I was doing today. I was teaching somebody how to drive a school bus. It was the first time she'd ever been inside of a large vehicle, and so We just took it one step at a time, and we kind of wove through some cones and whatnot.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's what Adele talked about when she was on here, who I'm speaking about her like you know her, but she's my wife anyways.
Okay.
a couple podcasts ago, she was on, she talked about teaching people how to bike camp. And yeah, so I am a big fan of any of these things. So can you tell me a little bit about work? What is it that you do for your day job right now?
Of course. Yeah. So I work for Cheers. It's C-H-I-E-R-S, and that stands for Central City Concern Hooper Inebriate Emergency Response Service.
Okay. Is Hooper a person?
Hooper is the detox center, detoxification center that we have here in Portland.
Okay.
Central City Concern manages that as well, and that does refer to David P. Hooper, who was, I believe, the last man to die of intoxication while incarcerated.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. So this is, Cheers is an organization. Well, it's a program. We were talking about this before we started rolling tape. It's a program administered and run by an organization called Central City Concern.
Mm-hmm.
And so you work for Central City.
Yes,
and
I do.
You work in the Cheers program.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't want to be uncharitable. You can tell me, is it uncharitable to call it the drunk tank?
No.
Okay.
No,
not. Because that's kind of the shorthand slang that a lot of people would think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't have a whole lot to do with simpler living, other than maybe it's where you end up if your lifestyle is so simple because of whatever you had to drink that night that you can't take care of yourself. So, yeah, I figured it'd be interesting. So, again, your friend of our listener, Eric, and my friend Eric, who you and I both know from earlier in mm-hmm. life, but he recommended, we had talked about Cheers. We had referenced it on an earlier podcast, and it seemed like it would be interesting enough to have you come in and talk about it. So
I'm glad I could.
Yeah. So how is it that people end up with your service? Like, when do people call the van to show up and pick up an inebriated person?
So there are a couple different circumstances. So we, just like the police computer that you see in a police vehicle or in an ambulance, we have one of those in the Cheers van. So, and that is based off of the police precincts here in the town. Somebody could call Portland police if they see someone down or they see someone maybe what we call sleeping in an unpurposeful position.
Unpurposeful position.
Unpurposeful position.
Is that slumped?
That would be slumped, face down on the sidewalk.
Okay.
Yeah, just something that doesn't look like they did it on purpose.
Like that person doesn't look like they belong there that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you and your wife are out walking and you see someone in an unpurposeful position, you may call 911 or non-emergency. So then the dispatcher may send a police officer out there to evaluate the situation, or they, depending on who is dispatching, they may just send us Cheers out there to go and evaluate the person.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways we get the calls. We also patrol the city, meaning we know particular spots where clients are what we call the people that we pick up. So where clients may be.
Which is very charitable. I like that.
Thank you. I wish I could say I came up with it. But.
Oh, sure. It's a good corporate culture.
So we patrol the city, and so we have the authority to initiate a call if we see someone down and that we want to talk to and evaluate.
Okay.
The third way that we could receive calls is somebody flags us down. Somebody sees the Cheers van driving by, and they might just wave us down because they think they see someone or they know someone that needs to be checked on.
Okay.
There's also a private security company, PPI, downtown. We work pretty closely with them. They patrol certain areas downtown where they can, if they see someone, if they see someone that they think needs evaluated, they can call us. And
okay.
So that would be, and then the fifth way is sometimes hospitals call us.
Oh, I see.
Emergency departments.
Okay. So this is not for the emergency room, because you're not taking them to the emergency room if the hospital calls you. But if the hospital has someone who has been intoxicated, then they say, hey, here's this person. They seem okay. Can you take them somewhere?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So sometimes somebody will self-present at an emergency room, or the ambulance, AMR, will take them in for maybe acute alcohol intoxication, or
okay.
maybe they got high on some sort of other drug.
Gotcha.
it gets to a certain point when the emergency department feels that they have extended their services with this person, and this person doesn't need their services anymore.
Okay.
So the emergency department will call us, and we can go there and transport the person to the sobering station.
Okay.
Or the drunk tank.
Yeah. Well, and the sobering station is probably a better term for it, because that's kind of the goal, right? It's like, this is where someone stays when they can't take care of themselves, but they need a place to be until they're kind of, they have their wits about them or something.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So are you the van driver then?
So my partner and I, we alternate.
Okay.
So one day I drive, and then the other day he drives. So the person that is not driving then would be the one interacting with the clients.
Okay.
Talking, having the radio communication, talking, using the computer for, you know, whatever we need to use the computer for.
So. Sure. You got like navigation on there.
Yeah, it is GPS enabled.
And then communication with your, you have a dispatcher, I'm assuming.
We are dispatched through what's called BOEC, the Bureau of Emergency Communications.
Oh, I see.
The same thing where paramedics and fire and police are dispatched out of.
Okay.
So so we are able, it's like almost like an intra email.
Yeah.
That we can communicate with them with.
So. Okay. Nice. So you said you switch off. So one day you're driving, one day you're assisting people.
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind of like an armored car sort of situation where one guy just sits in the cab all night?
No, not at all. Okay. No. I mean, the way that we're trained, and you know, the way my partner and I interact is that, you know, if I'm out on scene or he's out on scene, you know, we're both out there. I mean, because if I'm talking to the client, I may not see what's going on around me. For certain reasons, some people within the community the transit community don't like the Cheers program.
Okay.
And have adverse feelings towards us.
Okay, so people living outside or people who are homeless, mm-hmm. it's like they've been picked up by Cheers before, and they're like, I didn't like the way that went down.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So you gotta have somebody watching your back then.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if I'm interacting with the client, then John, my partner is, you know, he's seeing what's going on with the client too, but he's also just kind of the eyes and ears for what's going on around
okay.
us.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. So, when you're offering these services, when you're dealing with what's going on out there, are we looking at, is this someone who had a few drinks at the bar, too many, and they just can't find their way home? Like, does that happen?
Yes. Okay. Yes, definitely. Right. That is one of the situations.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Most of the people that we deal with are the chronic alcoholic addict transient, the homeless population or without home, but yeah, it is definitely that is one of the situations where maybe somebody had too many drinks, their friends unfortunately left them, and this person has just passed out.
Sure.
And so then yeah, we would step in and take care and evaluate this person until they can better care for themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting because we here on the Sprocket Podcast, obviously, so I love beer. Aaron doesn't drink, but he likes people who do, and so it's yeah, we celebrate the pleasures that a good beer or two can provide, but there's also the downside that if you have too many, you lose the ability to take care of yourself. So, so this is for whatever station of life you're in, this is something that you're dealing with on a daily basis.
Yes.
Does that characterize or does that sour like your perception of beer? Obviously, you're enjoying one now. So,
you know, when I first started the job. Yeah, it put things put that aspect of life into a different light for me.
Yeah.
You know, addiction has never run in my family, mm-hmm. and I've never really been a big drinker myself. But yeah, there were certain times when it's just like, wow, I'm constantly exposed to this lifestyle and the extreme of where these people end up, and I know I'm not going to end up there, but I really want to curtail or do everything I can to just not end up like that, I guess, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. Like you see whatever the state your clients are in, mm-hmm. you're like, I hope no one ever has to do this for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So it hasn't put you off beer entirely.
No, not entirely. I mean, well, and I think, you know, anything that I would drink would be like vastly different than compared to what our clients drink.
Sure. There are different tiers, different grades of things.
Yes.
That kind of geared for different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So longtime listeners will remember I used to enjoy malt liquor beverages. And I haven't, I'm sure maybe the time would be right for one at some point when I'm camping or something. I'm not sure. But, there was a time in which I drank a good many of those. And, you know, I don't think I was ever in need of the Cheers van because I had, you know, a nice, safe, comfortable place at home to enjoy those in. But, you know, there was a time at which I had, probably too many of them at a time in, it just kind of left me incapacitated. So if I was not home, that would have been, you know, I don't know that I was ever like I never was classified as an alcoholic. Nobody ever did an intervention with me, but I knew I was drinking too much. And so, you know, one of the nice things was starting the podcast kind of got me off some of that. But I think it is interesting to see kind of how certain products are geared just to like, hey, this will get you shit faced really quickly. So have some. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, they're. And you brought the malt liquor, but it's a very high alcohol content,
mm-hmm.
and it's very inexpensive.
Yeah, yeah,
and so
for sure.
Somebody goes and has to just panhandle and get, you know, $2 or $3, and then they can go and get their 24-ouncer of 2.11 or 4 Loko.
That'll get you the equivalent of a bottle of wine.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think 4 Loko was kind of my drink of choice at one point. But I'd never had it, and you know, I was listening to a podcast where they started out as day drinkers because they had just lost their jobs, and they were like, "Hey, why don't we do this thing?" Great show, by the way. But certainly, like, you know, unchecked and without something else to do, that can put you in the wrong place. So
definitely.
So what happens in your line of work when someone calls you, they say, "Hey, mm-hmm. there's a person," or you're patrolling and you discover someone in, what'd you call it? Not an uncomfortable position, though it may be.
An unpurposeful position.
Unpurposeful position.
Yes.
They didn't mean to end up this way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here they are somewhere slumped or contorted on the ground.
Yes.
You show up. What happens next?
Do you want me to go? I can go step by step.
That'd
through.
Be great. Yeah,
okay.
If you don't mind.
Sure. So if we are patrolling and we see someone in an unpurposeful position, what we typically do would initiate the call.
Uh-huh.
So we're basically through our MDT or the computer that we have in the van, we're letting dispatch know what we're doing and what location we're at, just in case we do need to call in for police to come in and help us out.
Okay.
So we would initiate the call. We would get out and we, depending on how the person is, like if the person is, let's just assume they're lying face down. So, I mean, I want to get some sort of, check their level of response.
Okay. So checking for vitals and that sort of thing, make sure that they are
not necessarily checking for vitals yet.
Okay.
Still, I mean, I just want to make sure that, you know, can I visually or audibly see that this person is breathing?
Okay,
that,
right.
That they're alive. You know, then
right.
I want to check and get some sort of response from them. If I, you know, I start out on like a verbal level, like say, "Hey, excuse me, sir." You know, and if that doesn't work, then I go into it's called painful stimulation.
Okay,
you know, which I never really,
right.
I never really liked that name, but it does serve a purpose. You know, because I mean, I'm checking to make sure this person is alive. So
it's like what your friends would be doing if they discovered that you were drunk.
Yes.
Kind of be like slapping you in the face or kind of shaking your shoulders or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't slap someone in the face.
Right.
Yeah.
We should probably clarify that. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. It's okay.
That was me, not you.
yeah. So, I mean, we have very tactful ways, I guess, to go mm-hmm. about checking using painful stimulation. I mean, you can take a pen
mm-hmm.
and rub it on someone's nail bed.
Okay. Nobody likes that.
No. there are pressure points behind someone's ear.
Okay.
You know,
the goal being you're kind of trying to cut through the haze to see, like, does this person need, like, significant medical attention or are they just drunk?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get a response from them when I called out sir or called out ma'am to them. So I'm going next to, like, somebody might view it as, like, an extreme measure, but mm-hmm. I want to see, like, yeah, exactly. Is this person just under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or do they need like more services than I can provide for them?
Sure. And it reminds me a little bit of what you do when you're exercising first aid protocol is you're like in first aid, you're checking the airway to make sure mm-hmm. that like they have they are breathing and they have a clear way to breathe, that sort of thing. So this is kind of like leading up to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe I should have mentioned this too. So anybody that works out on the GEARS program is either an EMT, emergency medical technician, or a paramedic.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, we do have that first aid training too. And so that, yeah, gels, you know, what mm-hmm. works well with each other. So
right. You're ready to go into that step if you need to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've used either verbal stimuli or painful stimuli to get any sort of response from this person.
Okay.
And then they might, you know, sit up a little bit, you know, or like, oh, you know, just give me the, hey, you know, like,
or leave me alone or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then by then, you know, we would just, you know, usually what my partner and I like to do is just introduce ourselves and just, you know, just to verbalize, hey, it's not the police. It's just the Cheers guys. We're just here to check on you.
Right.
You know,
do you identify yourself by name?
No, not my name.
You're like,
no.
Hey, we're Cheers.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody asks for my name, you know, I may or may not give it to them.
Sure.
It's very situational.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, at the very least, say, you know, it's just the Cheers guys. We're not here to hassle you. It's not.
Right. You're not in trouble.
Yeah.
We're here to help.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we'll tell them, you know, it's not the police. It's just the Cheers guys, you know, and it works. I guess that serves, you know, a couple purposes, you know, lets them know who we are.
Yeah.
Lets the public know, because a lot of people like to take pictures and video of us.
Gather around.
Yeah. So lets the general public know. And it's for my safety too, you know, my partner's safety.
For sure.
So now by this point, you know, we've got the person, you know, we've got some response. They're kind of aware of what's going on, you know. I mean, so while I'm talking to them, I'm also like using as many senses as I can. Like, what did I see prior to them, you know, getting any sort of response from them? I mean, were they are there beer bottles around them? Are they incontinent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I smelling a heavy alcohol scent coming off of them?
Sure.
You know, when they're talking to me, I mean, are they making sense? Is there a heavy speech, thick speech, slurred speech?
So all signs of intoxication.
Yep.
Then. Yeah.
Yep.
Try to make sure you evaluate the situation correctly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I'm doing this assessment, and then I'm kind of explaining to them. Sometimes, you know, somebody's familiar with Cheers and how, you know, how the program's going to go, but it's always in my best interest and everybody else's, you know, just to verbally explain what's going on to them.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we have to use what we like to call like a little bit of verbal judo.
Okay.
You know?
Yes.
Because sometimes people are not willing to come with us, you know?
Okay.
And so, you know, we have to say like, okay, well, you know, you were found down here on the street laying down on, you know, like Second and Burnside, you know, in a very exposed area, you know, you had your purse out here open. Somebody could have come by and taken your purse, or worse, somebody could have assaulted you. What I want to provide for you is a safe place. You know, it looks like you have been drinking, or it looks like you might be under the influence of, you know, fill in the blanks rug.
Sure.
So what I want to provide for you is a safe place to sober up. You know, the average stay is between 4 hours and 8 hours. There's no fines or fees. It's a completely confidential program. We're protected by HIPAA since we're considered a medical institution.
Oh, sure. So yeah, same as a doctor.
Yep.
Do
exactly.
No harm.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's confidential. We don't take mug shots. This isn't going on somebody's record. We don't run them for warrants. I want to give you food and I want to give you water. I just want to provide a safe place for you right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, sometimes maybe we do oversell it a little bit.
There's going to be couches and cookies and things.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a concrete floor, you know.
Sure.
If the person is cooperative, you know, and they agree to come with us, then my partner and I usually will go hands-on and assist the person into standing up if they're on the floor.
Okay.
Or if they were on the ground. Sorry, excuse me. Because, you know, usually, you know, unsteady gait, you know. And then we just escort them over to the Cheers van.
You got to make sure nobody tumbles on their way over.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we are EMTs as well,
yeah.
too, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But you're not carrying, you're probably not usually carrying something, because it sounds like this is a consent-based system. You can't just pick them up and take them. They have to say, yes, I'll go.
Well, so here, there's the rub, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
So, it's been a little over 30 years now that the city of Portland has decriminalized intoxication in public.
Okay.
So I guess in bigger cities, if somebody's intoxicated in public, they get taken to jail.
Oh, yeah.
So that this program was created to protect the homeless and protect the chronic drinkers.
Kind of a buffer between instant incarceration.
Yep.
Like, you're drunk, you go to the slammer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and also, I guess, as a result of that, the Oregon revised statutes, I forget the particular number that it is, but they...
Who could remember? ORS 945.4.B.
I do have a gentleman that I work with that can just rattle it off like that.
I respect those people. I am not one of those people.
So,
there's a law.
There is a law. Basically, so my partner and I, we're deputized by the sheriff of Multnomah County.
Okay.
So we put what's called a civil hold on someone.
Sure.
And so this law says that somebody can be held for up to 48 hours. I've never seen in the 5 years that I've been doing this job, I've never seen someone held for more than 24.
They'd have to be awfully intoxicated for 48 hours.
Right. So more than... If it goes more than like 6 or 8, you know, then you're getting into like your meth or your heroin or your methadone.
Okay.
So that law says that we can hold somebody legally for up to 48 hours. And so what I have to do after assessing this person is I have to write a narrative as to why we were called there, what I saw.
Documentation.
Yep.
Make sure everything is written down so they can refer to that later if there are any questions about what happened.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, because, you know, we are not always picking up just the chronic alcoholics. You know, we are picking up sometimes, you know, the moms or the dads or the tech guys, you know, that do have access to money and lawyers, you know.
Sure.
And so I need to have what's called the Cheers report is what we call it.
Okay.
The narrative that says basically what I saw, why I feel this person can't care for themselves, a plan of action, what we are going to do with this person, and how they can't care for themselves because of intoxication to alcohol or their methamphetamine use. And then we transport them to the sobering station.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm curious, just because we talk a lot about bikes on the Sprocket podcast, mm-hmm. Have you ever dealt with someone who was next to a bike or had a bicycle with them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you do in that? Did you bring the bike along too?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. There have been there are a lot of. I'm sure you've seen a lot of transient bicyclists in town that do have their caravan, their bike trailer. Going
okay, so a bicycle and a trailer, or two trailers, or whatever they're carrying behind the bike that carries things that they like and keep with them.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, yeah.
And so we have in our. The Cheers van, it's big. I think it's a Ford like E350, I think.
Okay,
so it's fairly big size.
Is it a 15 passenger or?
It probably at some point was. I mean, it's been retrofitted to fit us for our needs.
Sure.
But
kind of a containment area in back.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a client area. And then in the non-client area where we're. Our belongings go, and we can put clients' belongings. Yeah. We'll put bikes in there. We'll put trailers in there. We'll put their. As much property as a client has that they find valuable,
sure,
we'll bring that with us.
Okay,
So bicycles, I mean it's a common thing.
So you're helping people out, helping them keep their stuff.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
if they are living outdoors and they don't have a place to keep them or nobody's there watching out for them, which is why you're there in the first place. Then mm-hmm. they don't lose something they put a lot of themselves into.
Exactly.
Okay, that's cool. So. When someone gets into the van, what is their area like?
So it is. I referred to it earlier as the client compartment. I mean, it's so there's a plexiglass window that separates where my partner and I are and where all of our medical equipment is from that goes into the client compartment.
Okay.
And the whole client compartment is rhino lined.
Like a truck bed or something?
Exactly.
It's a non-skid?
Like, yep.
Okay.
It's rhino aligned, you know, maybe because, you know, we put some people in there that are dirtier, you know, that are, like I said, that are incontinent, you know.
Sure. And so it can be hosed out.
Yep. It's very easy for us to clean it out.
Okay.
Kind
of like a Honda Element.
Yeah.
They stopped making those. It's kind of too bad because I love the idea of a vehicle you can hose out.
It's convenient.
Yeah. I should get if I ever buy a vehicle, I should get it rhino lined. Okay, but continue.
And they're unrestrained in the back of the client compartment.
Okay.
And then it's pretty simple. I mean, there are lights back there, you know, and we have so we can see when we need to look in.
Mm-hmm.
There's ventilation back there. They have, you know, we have access to turn on heat or air conditioning depending on the time of the year.
So if somebody wakes up and says, "Hey, it's way too cold back here," you can help them out.
Yep. I mean, you know, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, we try to make it as comfortable as possible.
Oh, sure.
For the clients, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, and transport is no fun. I mean, even like the feeling of a hangover is no fun. So even, you know, what might result from poor transport, it doesn't sound like you guys are poor transporters. It sounds like you're looking out for people's better interests as you move them around.
We try to, yes.
Yeah. All right. So, and you get to your central facility, your location then?
Yeah, so we take them to the drunk tank or the sobering station,
mm-hmm.
Which everybody's probably driven by it but has no idea where it is.
Right. I'm guessing it's one of those places that's just kind of in plain sight. You don't have to tell me. I'm sure it's not the sort of thing you advertise. But
we transport the person there. We have to go in and do what's called a turnover. There's a staff usually of 3 to 5 people, depending on the shift and what time of day it is, that are working in there. The person that we do, again, what's called a turnover to, they are either an EMT or a paramedic.
Okay, so they're medically qualified
yep.
to do the same thing as you're doing,
mm-hmm.
to take care of someone, make sure they're safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, a lot of the staff there at the sobering station is EMTs. There are a couple people there in recovery.
Okay.
But, a lot of it right now is EMT. Like EMT heavy.
Right. You mean someone working there is in recovery or
yeah.
so? Okay, right. So, so they went through a kind of a bad time and they're getting better and they want to help other people get mm-hmm. out too, if they can.
That's one of the nice things about Central City Concern.
Yeah.
So,
kind of people helping from experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because it offers, you know, I mean, I do come at it from the medical standpoint, but someone who has walked in those other person's shoes, I can't give that point of view. I can't give that viewpoint.
Right.
So,
it's like the sympathy empathy disconnect is like you can only empathize with someone who has similar experiences to you. And so the empathy is very powerful.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's cool.
I go and do this turnover and let them know, who the client is that we have, you know, how we found them, it is called a drunk tank, but we don't always transport people there under the influence of alcohol.
Uh-huh.
You know, it could be meth, heroin, methadone, you know.
Right. Again, that's just a slang term.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. And again, I feel kind of uncharitable because we're talking about this like as an actuality as opposed to like the drunk tank sounds like that. Yeah, you don't want to go there or whatever. So it's, yeah. Yeah. I know words are so powerful and I'm always worried about misusing them. So, yeah. But it is a good shorthand.
It is. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, but people could be under the influence of anything when they arrive there.
Yeah. So, and I have to tell that to my EMT when I go in and let them, and then,
is this booze? Is it something else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, as we all know, people's bodies react differently to all sorts of different drugs.
Right.
So, and then once I've done the turnover, my partner and I escort the client in, that person, their property or valuable property is inventoried. We're all on camera there. And so it's all documented.
Okay,
phones, cash, you know, IDs, laptops, camcorders.
It's not a racket.
Nope, not a racket.
everything's accounted for.
People accuse us of stealing their stuff all the time.
Sure.
It's all, I mean, there are, at least in that admin area, there are, I think, three cameras watching us, you know,
yeah.
and we have the double signature policy. So one of us has to sign for, and then if a police officer brings the person in, that police officer also has to sign for the person's property. So then the person comes in and they're evaluated by the EMT, and then depending on their level of cooperativeness or their unpredictability or their behavior, they would go into we have 3 units, two are for guys, one are for girls, and they're fairly big.
Uh-huh.
I mean, probably fit between, I mean, I don't know, maybe between 30 and 50 people.
Okay.
I've never seen them that full.
Yeah.
But
so you mean all 3 can hold the total of 50 or so?
Each one can hold 50
people. Okay.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen them that full.
Right.
But
that's good.
Yeah, it is good, right?
Yeah.
and then, but if they are not able to cooperate, follow directions, get along, play well with others.
Yeah.
Then they go to what we call safety rooms.
Okay.
Which are for individual rooms where the person just goes. They're maybe about half the size of this studio here that we're in.
Okay. So just maybe like a 6 foot by 8 foot or what have you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they go in there. Yeah, like I said, if they're unpredictable, uncooperative.
Is that a soft surface sort of room?
No, that one is. That one, yeah, it has concrete floor, cement walls.
So whatever somebody does to themselves, then that's kind of on them? Or
yeah, I mean, you know, we try to minimize that as much as possible.
Sure. But it's also, it's not, it, I mean, in the sense that clinical being that, like, this is a residential facility or so. This is not a residential facility. This is just a place where people come to kind of dry out or clear themselves of their symptoms. So,
exactly.
So if it was clinical, you might have like a padded room with people with like restraints or whatever. I've heard that like in youth facilities, they'll have like a mattress that they'll wrap somebody up in, which is kind of like a way to restrain someone without a lot of hands on sort of thing.
Wow.
But this is not something that you're doing. It's
no,
not, yeah,
no, we are not. The only sort of restraining that we would do is when we're hands on with the client.
Sure.
And then escorting them, excuse me, either to, it's the narwhal.
That's a good narwhal.
Yeah. The only time we would be doing really any sort of training is when we are escorting them into a unit or to a safety room, or, you know, in the worst case scenario, if someone does try to fight with us.
Okay. Yeah. And this is kind of past your job now, right? We're describing like what happens after you drop them off. So you're no longer involved when it comes to the actual facility, or do you do some shifts there as well?
I do some shifts. I mean,
okay.
So most of the people, in fact, yeah, all of the people that work out on Cheers are, you know, cross-trained to work there at the sobering station.
I mean,
because it's our same parent company, Central City Concern.
So everybody does a little bit of everything for the operation.
If they want to.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're on Cheers, you are. Yeah. I mean, you're cross-trained on all the positions. Not everyone that works inside is cross-trained out on Cheers, for example.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to meet certain requirements.
Okay. So all widgets are gadgets, but not all gadgets are widgets or something
like
that. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Very cool. So that's, I mean, it sounds like it's wonderfully well organized. It's the sort of thing that, you know, there's a system. It seems like it's effective. Like it's something that does keep people safe. When people leave, how does that process work?
So 99% of the time people leave on their own, on recognizance. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned earlier the average time is between that 4 to 8 hours, depending on the substance or the drug used. So the staff that works inside the sobering station, they'll evaluate the person. So every 2 hours, you know, they go and, you know, check on the person. Once they feel that person is better able to care for themselves and make better decisions, not decisions that, you know, end up in the sobering station.
Yeah.
They'll talk to the person and make sure they have a clear plan.
Where are you going? What you're going to do? How are you going to get there?
Yep, exactly. And sometimes it's just as easy as being like, you know, someone saying, "Oh, I'm just going back to my campsite," you know, and they'll give us, you know, some coordinates where their campsite is.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. Where are you going to go? How are you going to get there? What are you going to do? And then we just communicate that to, or the staff communicates that to the EMT, property is grabbed, and then the person just has to sign some paperwork. They usually sign two pieces of paperwork. One that says that I know that I'm leaving right now and that I can care for myself.
I'm on my own.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then a property receipt if they had any,
I got all my stuff.
Yep. Any valuable property dropped, they'll sign for that as well. And then they just are free to go back out onto the streets and, you know, wherever they're going to go to.
Yeah.
That's how most people leave.
Okay.
You know, we get the people, we do it's called a release to care.
Okay.
So,
to care. So someone else takes custody so that they can provide more extensive care or additional, like a longer time.
So with a release to care, I mean, what we would do is say Halloween is coming up, you know, for example. So that's going to be a busy night for us.
Sure. You'll be on that night.
Yeah. I'm working until 3 in the morning that night.
Yeah.
So it's what we call a drinking holiday. So we may be picking up clients.
Yes.
You get it?
A drinking holiday is coming. Yes.
So we may be picking up clients that we don't normally see, or a demographic that we don't normally see on a regular basis.
Sure. Like, you might be dealing more with transient populations on a regular basis, but on Halloween, everybody gets way drunker than usual. So
That's why we normally get off at midnight, but that's why we're staying out until 3, until the bars close, okay. You know, and try to help the police out as much as possible.
You got college students and young 20-something hipsters and lawyers and doctors, and everyone goes out and gets drunk.
Yep.
Okay.
So we pick up some lawyer on Halloween, and he may not be entirely familiar with the situation, you know,
right.
And you know, maybe there at the
hasn't been through the program before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they're at the sobering station and it's like, well, when do I get my one phone call?
And you're like, I'm not the police.
Yeah. It may feel like they're in jail because, I mean, they are being held against their will.
Right.
But it's a medical facility. And so they don't get that one phone call that you know, you think you get from that Hollywood tells us or the movies tell us you get.
Right, right. And if it was police, it might be a slightly different story. But you're providing, this is, again, is kind of a, it's a safety service,
mm-hmm.
And a public service. So this is, I'm trying to think of what the distinction would be. So you've mentioned that, you're looking for consent when you do this, if you can get it, but consent is not required.
Yes.
So the lawyer might end up in the sobering station, and they might be unhappy about it later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do you deal with that? Because obviously you're waiting for them to sober up.
Right. I mean, have you ever tried reasoning with an intoxicated person?
Oh, yes.
It doesn't usually end up well.
Totally.
And
you can't usually reason with them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Going back to that verbal judo that I mentioned, you know, you do your best to de-escalate the situation, you know, and try to explain the law as best you can. Sometimes people get that and sometimes they don't. You know, that there's, you know, you'll get a lot of the lawyer saying, like, I just want to call my wife. She'll come and pick me up, you know, and, which is an option that we'll keep out here. You know, it's like a card that we can play sometimes.
Something you could do.
Yes. But our job, our first and foremost job is to get this person sober, or at least sober enough so that they can care for themselves, you know?
Sure.
Kind
of restoring independence.
Mm-hmm. So if this person is, you know, if they're belligerent and yelling at us and threatening to sue us, you know, I mean, the first thing I'm not going to do is like, oh, hey, do you want to go call your wife and have her come down and pick you up?
Right.
I mean,
let me turn you loose on her.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you need a lot of patience to work in this job. So it's just kind of a lot of just sitting and just kind of letting that person just, like, you know, going from a boil to a simmer and,
sure.
and going down to, you know, not. You know, just being like tepid water.
Yes. And if this is a temperature analogy, the goal is absolute zero.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yep.
Interesting.
And then, with that lawyer, for example, you know, that is someone that we may offer a phone call to once this person. So we know this person is still intoxicated. But you know, so that this person is calm down enough, and you know, we'll talk and be like, okay, you want to make a phone call to your wife. You understand that it's 2 a.m. Is your wife willing to come all the way from Wilsonville to come down to the drunk tank and pick you up?
Right.
Oh yeah, she's totally willing. You know. Okay. Well, you know,
your judgment is clouded.
that may be someone though that we do get that phone call to.
Sure.
And so that would be an example of that release to care when this person, we still feel this person is intoxicated, could benefit from being in the sobering station still, but you know, that this gentleman's wife is coming down to pick him up. And so then she signs that she's caring for this individual. So that could be, you know, one way that we would address the lawyer or, you know, the 20-something hipster that gets brought in on
like
Halloween.
Like if there are people who care about this person who will respond, then that's a potential possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, is there anything else about the process that we haven't explored yet? right, that's pretty much it.
I think, it's I don't want to say it's bare bones, but I mean, but it's pretty straightforward. You know, I mean, once you strip it down, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you know, we basically exist to save people from themselves, and to provide a safe place for people to sober up.
Sure.
Unfortunately, you know, not a lot of people believe that. You know, I mean, there's
well, particularly the clients, I'm sure there's an understanding there that may or may not be correct.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's Cheers kind of in a big nutshell.
Okay.
That's
all right. What's the biggest nut there is? That's like bigger than a walnut. But yeah. It's a Brazil nut.
I was going to say Brazil nut. I mean, are those bigger?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I've ever seen like a complete Brazil nut. Anyways, that's the nutshell of Cheers.
Yes.
So Cheers, again, it's publicly subsidized, operated by a nonprofit. So does Cheers need support, and can people provide that?
So you can always donate to make donations to Central City Concern.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe you can earmark it and say, I want this to go to the Cheers program.
Sure.
I'm not sure. I don't work on that end of the program, so I'm not entirely sure how much money is funneled down to us.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I know CC is always looking for donors and grants.
Great. Okay. So we can direct people that way then.
Yeah.
Is it centralcitycontern.org?
Oh, man.
It's okay. Don't feel like you have to know. I'll look it up. But yeah, it's definitely I have seen what they've done over the years. They've been around. I've lived here since 2000. You've lived in the metro area your entire life. So
pretty much,
yeah,
yes.
You're familiar with them. You've seen what they do. I respect their work enormously. And as I understand, the mayor has also declared a state of emergency around the homelessness and housing crisis that exists in Portland right now. And so this is something that's kind of coming to light. So what you do as a part of the Cheers program is a big part of kind of reacting to that until the state of emergency has been cleared. So yeah, I recommend anybody who lives in Portland to get in touch with Central City Concern if you like what they do, if you like the idea of working with this crisis that's been declared. That's an organization that's kind of on the front lines of that. And if you live somewhere else, I would say it's probably good to find out what's happening with these issues in your own community. So. And then if you have extra money, you could send it to Portland. So,
well, and you know what I was also just thinking about. I mean, I would like to extend an invitation to you, Brock, and you can come and do a ride along on Cheers if you'd like to. Yeah.
Oh, I'd be interested.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should talk about this off mic. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Yeah, that'd be fascinating. Kind of like the kind of like the police ride along, except not.
Different, yeah. I mean, it's similar, but you know, a different element. So
yeah, going out on the beat.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. So, well, just briefly, we probably should wrap this up for you.
Okay.
But tell me, you arrived here on bike, and you've had some involvement in not professional, I guess, but sporting bicycling events in the past. So, what's your bicycle life like?
You know, right now my bicycle life consists really just of my fixed gear, which I love. I love that bike to death.
Yeah,
that's my baby. But
what do you like? Is it about fixed specifically? Is it something that,
You know, I hadn't ridden a fixed until probably about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And then now that's all I like consistently ride.
You got bit by the bug.
I got bit by the bug.
Okay.
And I love it.
Yeah.
There's just, I've never felt so,
badass. Certifiably so.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
There's something about the experience that gives you that feeling, I'm sure.
I ride at the brake on a fixed gear, so I don't know how much of a badass that makes me.
Well, it depends on who you ask. I think to me that makes you smart and responsible. And legally, you know, I believe your bicycle needs to have a brake installed by the law, at least here in where we live. So, yeah, but I would not quibble with that. But it depends on who you talk to.
But prior to riding the fixed gear, I mean, I had never felt I'd never felt so, I guess, literally and figuratively connected to a bike. I mean, it's just such an interesting feeling and sensation to get that. I mean, that bike, you know, and how fast it's moving is totally dependent on you. I mean,
it's so visceral, right?
Yes,
it's like,
it is.
This
very
is like
visceral.
You and the bike literally are one. And
yes.
It's like something that people say, but it's also, it really is true, is that every motion you make is reflected in the bike.
Exactly.
And everything the bike does comes back to you when you're not working. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have a road bike at home, and it just, you know,
it's
the
same anymore.
No, it's just been sitting there.
You know, I love you, baby, but I got this thing I like to do now. Yeah,
it's my mistress over here.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I kind of had that with the tall bike. I had somebody build a tall bike for me,
wow.
Which is kind of the I don't know. It depends on. I've never been told that I'm a cheater, but I kind of feel like a cheater because a lot of people who have tall bikes have welded them themselves.
Okay,
it's kind of custom rig. I had somebody build mine for me, but it is kind of like that where it's like you have this new bike, this new way to ride, and you're like, oh, this is special, and I might do this more than the other bike now. But yeah. So are you an everyday commuter or occasional commuter or what?
Everyday commuter.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Nice.
I mean, I don't want to say I'm fair weather, but
but everybody is to a certain extent.
Yeah. I don't like riding in the rain. I mean, I'll ride when it's
right.
30 degrees out and you know, just layer up. But commute. I like to try to drive as little as possible and make as small a footprint as possible. So
sure.
Anytime I can, you know, that I can just like. Put some fun between my legs and just ride around
as
town.
As they say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the older ones too. That's a sticker that's been around for like forever.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole like the early, as I like to call it, the first wave Portland bicycle culture. I'm not sure like exactly what the time periods are, but you know, like basically people who were into bike stuff when I first arrived here around 2000, and then there's like a second wave somewhere in there. And then like third wave is kind of the, like the Thursday night ride, which actually I'm missing right now.
Oh.
But I've only been on one. I love the idea of the Thursday night ride, but I'm so like tired by the end of the week that, yeah. So anyways, yeah. What motivates you? What keeps you on the bike? You mentioned like environmental concerns, like carbon reduction, that sort of thing.
Yes.
You like the way it feels.
I do. Yeah. I like the way it feels. I mean, I just there's a certain excitement I get from riding my bike through the city.
Yeah.
And just, I tolerate driving, but I don't really like it. I don't really like being like stuck inside this box and moving
sure.
one block at a time. I
yeah.
mean, I like being able to, I do find a little bit of like pleasure in being able to look around and be like, I am flying past all of you guys. I'm
right.
Splitting,
right.
splitting lanes.
You
and
sad bastards stuck in traffic. Look at me. Look at me.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's, I mean, you know, and then, yeah, I mean, I think there's also something very childlike about riding a bike.
There is, isn't
know?
There?
Yeah.
It's something that I feel like it keeps you young.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
feel like that's the sort of thing that, like, dudes with gray hair, when they're riding bikes, and ladies with gray hair, too. I don't want to be inclusive, you know. Anybody who's old riding a bike, like, there's something about that experience that either reminds you of what you felt like when you rode your first bike at, like, age 6 or something, or there's something that that harkens back to the feeling, even if you didn't ride a bike when you were a kid. It's like there is a youthfulness to the bicycling
yes.
experience. So, yeah. So you get that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I mean, that's probably one of the main reasons why I love riding.
Yeah. Do you commute? Do you go out for fun rides? Or does it depend?
I think it depends. I mean, just so with, like I said, I mean, I do have the road bike, but, you know, fixed gears, I mean, long distance, I mean, that bike doesn't seem to do well on long distance, at least like from my body wise, you know,
sure. You got to work up to something like
yeah.
that. There was, when my wife and I did the West Coast on touring bikes, there were some stickers
wow.
we saw that said one gear, one love all the way down the coast.
Wow.
They were stuck on signposts and stuff. And I had great respect for like the strength it would take to do that.
Oh,
also
yeah.
sounded like something I would never want to do. But but yeah, so you're kind of limited in that way based on like, yeah, you can't go too far fixed.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to say it's a regret, but there are some times, you know, where I do feel like just jumping on my road bike, you know, and doing like a 50 or 60 miler, but,
yeah. Well, it's kind of like the energy that you have too. And I mean, you work late, so it's, that does kind of cut into the daylight hours at
yes.
least and how much energy you have when it comes time for the sun to be up and everything. So, yeah, I get that. Makes sense to me. I know I work during the day and I still don't have, you know, I have the opportunity to get good sleep every night. And, you know, aside from commuting, I don't get out that much.
Okay.
So I like getting like a weekend or a couple of, I don't know, however many days I can get off in a row and going out and taking some kind of a trip somewhere. So, yeah, you know, the opportunities are there. But there's also something nice about being content. Like if you can't get away from the city, like liking where you live and liking the bicycle riding you can do around your neighborhood. And in your
yes.
town from place to place, even liking your commute. I'm trying to remember who it was. I, I want to say it was an article on Bike Portland, and somebody was recommending that if you become kind of tired of your commute, you should change it up. You should go a different way than you usually go. And for the life of me, I'm sure it's someone I know, and I feel bad. And if it's someone that reminds me, I'll feel even worse. But someone wrote this, and they were like, you know what? Just go out and take a different road and see what happens. So I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. You know, explore your city. You don't have to get out of town to have a good time, to do something different, and to kind of inject some life into your everyday moving around. So, yeah.
I agree. I mean, they've been doing construction on my commute into work on 4th, I think.
Okay. Downtown 4th?
Yes. Yeah, downtown 4th.
Haven't been there for a while. What's happening down there?
That's a good question.
Nobody knows.
It's all torn up. I guess that's what the city likes. Hopefully they're improving our roads.
Well, that's what they say.
but yeah, I mean, I've had to go down to 2nd and, you know, I mean, 2 blocks down, you know, and that just feels like it's a totally different commute in to work still, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you live on the east side or the west side?
Southwest.
Okay, there we go. Do you enjoy Southwest?
I'm learning too. I've only been living over there since March. Prior to that, I had done 5 years over in North, or no, sorry, 8 years in Northeast.
Okay, yeah.
And I had never told my, I had always told myself, I was like, I'm never moving over to the West Side.
Right. Well, there's a certain stigma in this town. And I mean, I'm sure every locality has something like this, like the right side, wrong side of the tracks or whatever. For whatever reason, someone doesn't want to live there. And then, like, you kind of explore and you're like, hey, this isn't so bad. This is a different than I thought it was. Yeah. So are you deep Southwest or are you like kind of like PSU-ish?
PSU-ish, yeah.
Okay, there we go. So kind of like the south end of downtown, the uphill side of downtown.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Makes for an easy commute in because I just catch that downhill all the way down to Burnside.
Yeah. So, and Portland is interesting because the river is such a divide. And like, you know, we put in the new bridge, the new transit bridge, and we have had the Hawthorne Bridge forever. People that commute from one side of the river to the other, they'll do it for work, but there is kind of a cultural divide. Like, I don't know a lot of people that go into downtown for fun, and I don't know a lot of people, maybe the more people that live on the west side that would come to Southeast for fun or Northeast or whatever, but yeah, there is kind of this cultural divide. It's funny how that town works. So, yeah. But, well, thank you for coming in. Really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad I just worked out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's really illuminating. I like knowing kind of how things work and what processes go through. And again, Central City Concern, if you got a couple extra bucks kicking around in your pocket, you want to donate it and you're listening to this, you should. So, let's sign off for the evening.
All right.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Brent Kepper, is there anything else you want to share with the people?
No, just...
Don't get too drunk. It's a drinking holiday coming up.
I know. I got to work it too.
And there are more drinking holidays coming after that. You know, this is kind of it's the season. Do you think there's anything like seasonal affective about it? Obviously, like, people who want to drink are going to drink anytime. But I feel like, at least for me, I like to drink anytime. But there's also a thing to like it being dark for longer. There's not as much sunlight here in the Northern Hemisphere, and we're above the 48th parallel. And so there, 45th. Anyways, we're up here in the upper half where we get less sunlight than other people do. So I don't know. There's something about it that seems to me kind of, it's like fending off the darkness with a little bit of cheer.
Yeah.
But if it's too much cheer, you get into trouble. So
yeah. Anyways, then you see me.
Everybody, be responsible. That's probably
please,
our.
Please, yes. Be responsible.
You know, we have this thing we do every show, or almost every show. It's call to action. So turn on my drums and issue the command to people, like, you know, just be responsible, be smart, don't do anything dumb. You can in fact get a bicycling under the influence of intoxicants. That goes on your driver's license record, so it affects your life in a big way. Don't be dumb. And if you're dumb, don't get caught. Be smart. Talk to your friends. There are other ways. There's a bunch of transit. There's a bunch of car sharing and Uber type situations. Don't put yourself in harm's way. That's our PSA for today. That's like the friendliest call to action I think I've got in a long time.
Really?
Usually it involves like a lot more like, you know, like, get off my damn street, you stupid cars or whatever. So anyways.
I liked it. I liked it. Nicely done, sir.
Brent Kepper, thank you for coming
in. Of course. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call or text to 503-847-9774. Twitter @SprocketPodcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music, Hurt Bird for our headline sounder, Marcus Norman for graphic design, and thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Kara Marin-Lean, Richard Wazenski, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen-Miller, Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood, Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Nose, Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaser, Caleb Jenkinson, JP Keeley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt, Patrick R. Chain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole, Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson, Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista Skukas, John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy, King of Division, Josh Zissen, and Richard G. All right, brush your teeth and go to bed.
So far, so good. Say something nonsensical, or say something sensical if you like.
Something sensical if I like.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, we're getting the perfect signal from you.